Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really digging into how we learn best.
Yeah, we're looking at what actually works based on, well, a lot of research.
We've got a great set of sources, a huge meta-analysis on study techniques, some stuff on group work versus solo.
Right, and also how our own, habits and attitudes play a role. It's quite a mix.
Our mission, really, is to pull out the practical stuff, strategies you can actually use, whether you study alone or with others.
Exactly. We've got that big Donahue and Hattie meta-analysis covering, what was it, 242 studies?
Wow, yeah.
Then Alterman and Harsh on mixing individual and group work online. Some tips from College Vine for solo studying.
Okay.
A piece from Listening on the Pros and Cons of Group versus Individual. Student experiences from Hammer Churiak and Kaufman on study habits and skills.
So a really rounded view.
Hopefully, yeah, to give you some solid insights.
Okay, let's start unpacking it. Maybe begin with the individual techniques when it's just you and the books.
Good idea. That big meta-analysis building on Dunlosky's work is key here. They looked at 10 common techniques.
And sort of ranked them by effectiveness.
Pretty much, yeah. Based on the amount of evidence supporting them, they grouped them into high, moderate, and low support categories.
And what landed in high?
The big two were practice testing, so quizzing yourself and distributed practice, spacing out your study.
Okay, those sound familiar. What about moderate?
That included things like elaborative interrogation, asking yourself why things are the way they are. Also, self-explanation, connecting new stuff to what you already know.
Right.
And interleaved practice, which is mixing up different kinds of problems or topics in one session.
Interesting. And the low category. I bet some popular ones are in there.
You guessed it. Things like summarization, highlighting or underlining, keyword mnemonics using imagery, and just plain old rereading.
Wow, okay. Highlighting and rereading are definitely things I did a lot.
A lot of people do. But the evidence, well, it puts them in that lower tier of support.
So when we say low support, what does that actually mean in terms of impact? Does the meta-analysis give us numbers?
It does, yeah. They used effect sizes. Generally, high support techniques were above 0.70. Moderate was roughly 0.54 to 0.69.
And low?
Below 0.53. So, a smaller measurable impact on learning outcomes in these studies.
But hang on, even those low ones, you said they still had some positive effects, something like 0.44 on average.
That's right. It's not that they do nothing. An effect size of 0.44 is still considered, well, potentially worthwhile. It's just
that others are more worthwhile.
Exactly. Your time might be better spent on, say, practice testing than on just highlighting. More bang for your buck, learning-wise.
Okay, that makes sense. But you mentioned limitations to this research.
Yeah, a big one is the type of learning most studies looked at. It was mostly what you'd call surface learning.
Like memorizing facts.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Facts, definitions. And they usually tested recall almost immediately after studying or looked at near transfer.
Near transfer.
Meaning applying the knowledge in a situation very similar to how you learned it. Like using a formula for the same type of math problem.
Ah, okay. So less about deep understanding or using it later in different ways.
Exactly. There's less research within this meta-analysis on deep learning. Applying knowledge in totally new contexts that's far transfer, or how well these techniques work for long-term retention months or years later.
Right. So highlighting might help for tomorrow's quiz, but maybe not for grasping a core concept long-term.
That's a good way to put it. It's context dependent.
Okay. What about practical tips for solo study? College Vine had some specific advice, right?
They did. Pretty straightforward stuff, actually. Set specific goals for each study session. Keep your stuff organized.
Good habits, basically.
Yeah, foundational habits. And they also suggested using multiple resources. Don't just rely on the textbook. Look at articles, videos, whatever helps.
Get different angles on the material.
Precisely.
And the listening source mentioned learning styles.
Wow.
Visual, auditory, that kind of thing.
They did. Tailoring methods to whether you learn best by seeing, hearing, or doing, it's something many people find helpful anecdotally.
So worth experimenting with for yourself, even if the big meta-analysis looks at averages.
Absolutely. Anything that makes studying more engaging for you is likely beneficial. Personalization matters.
Okay, let's circle back to those top two, practice testing and distributed practice, the MVPs.
Definitely the heavy hitters, according to the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Distributed practice or spaced repetition, it's just so much better than cramming.
Spreading it out over time.
Yes. Revisiting material at increasing intervals, it really cements it in your long-term memory. Way more effective than one massive panic session.
In there. And practice testing, like flashcards or practice questions.
Exactly. Anything where you're actively trying to pull the information out of your brain, not just passively reviewing it.
It forces you to retrieve it.
Right. And that retrieval process itself strengthens the memory. Plus, it shows you what you don't know yet. It's diagnostic.
So you know where to focus.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It's really powerful. The act of trying, even if you get it wrong, helps you learn.
Okay, solid advice for solo work. But what about learning with others? Collaboration. What did Alterman and Harsh say?
Well, first off, they emphasized that individual and collaborative learning aren't enemies. They can actually work together really well.
Complementary.
Yes. Group work is great for tackling really complex problems, maybe things too tough for one person.
Yeah.
Or for getting different perspectives, getting feedback.
Things you miss on your own.
Exactly.
They made a distinction, though, between different types of collaboration. Tightly versus loosely coordinated.
Yeah. Good point. Tightly coordinated is when everyone's working together very closely, often in real time, building a shared understanding. Think editing a shared document together or building a wiki page as a team.
Okay. And loosely coordinated.
That's more like cooperation, maybe.
Yeah.
Individual contributions within a common project, like everyone writing their own blog post on a topic, then commenting on each other's. Less moment-to-moment interaction.
Right. And they had ideas for making online collaboration work better.
They did. Some practical heuristics, like for blogs, let students like or give badges to good posts, encourages quality.
Gamification, almost.
Sort of, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For wikis, maybe dividing up the labor clearly so everyone have a part. And this idea of staging activities.
Staging?
Breaking down a big collaborative task into smaller sequential steps.
Mm.
Build up the complexity.
That sounds much more manageable. Now, what about the student perspective? Hamer Kiriak looked at actual student experiences with group work.
Yeah, that was interesting. Overall, students did feel group work helped them learn both the subject matter and how to actually work with others.
But there were conditions, right? It wasn't always positive.
Definitely not. For it to work well, they needed three things. Genuine learning happening, academic and social skills, a good study social function,
you know,
feeling supported, connected to the group, motivated, and crucially, good organization. How the group is set up, how tasks are divided, making sure contributions are fair.
Organization again. It seems key.
It really is. Just putting people in a room or a breakout room isn't enough. Structure matters.
Hamer Kiriak also talked about working as a group versus just working in a group.
Yes, a really important distinction. Working in a group can just be dividing tasks, doing them separately, and stapling them together at the end. Minimal real interaction.
Right.
Working as a group means true collaboration. Shared goals, building on each other's ideas, creating something joint. That's where the real learning benefits seem to happen.
And the dreaded free rider problem, did that come up?
Oh, yes. Big time. It's a major source of frustration and can really kill motivation for the rest of the group.
When one person just doesn't pull their weight.
Exactly. And students often don't know how to handle it. Bad past experiences can make people really dislike group work altogether.
So having clear expectations and maybe assign roles could help, like the listening source suggested. Facilitator, note taker.
Absolutely. That structure provides accountability. Everyone knows what they're supposed to be doing. It pushes the group towards working as a group.
Okay. So we've covered techniques, solo versus group. But Kaufman's work adds another layer, right? The whole habits, skills, and attitudes piece, SHSAs.
Yes, and this is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Kaufman's meta-analysis showed that these non-intellectual factors, your study skills, your habits, your attitude towards learning, can predict academic success just as strongly, sometimes even more strongly, than things like cognitive ability or your previous grades.
Wow. Really? As important as, like, how smart you are?
The data suggests yes, especially in higher education. It's not just what you know, but how you approach learning.
So what kinds of things fall under SHSAs?
It's a mix. Study skills, like knowing how to manage your time or use effective learning strategies. Study habits, like having a regular study time and place. Study attitudes, do you see learning as valuable?
Okay.
Also study motivation, metacognitive skills, basically, understanding your own learning.
Thinking about your thinking.
Exactly. And even study anxiety plays a role.
And you said this becomes more important in college?
Yeah, interestingly, the link between SHSAs and grades was weak in high school, but much stronger in college. It seems these skills and attitudes are really crucial for handling the independence and demands of university-level work.
It's not just about putting in the hours, then.
Definitely not. It's about the quality of those hours, driven by good skills and habits.
And there are tools, inventories, that can measure these things. like Lassie.
Yes. Things like the SSHA and Lassie have shown pretty good validity in predicting who's likely to succeed academically. They can help pinpoint areas for improvement.
Okay, so pulling this all together, it sounds like the ideal approach isn't just one thing.
Not at all. It's about combining things. Like Alterman and Harsh suggested, mixing effective individual study with well-structured collaborative work.
Maybe starting solo, then discussing, then reflecting alone again.
That could be a great sequence, yeah. And it links back to that toolbox idea from Donahue and Hattie.
Having a range of strategies and knowing when to use which one.
Exactly. And having the self-regulation, the metacognitive skill, to make those choices effectively based on what you need to learn, it's about being a strategic, adaptable learner.
So for you listening, the big takeaways seem to be focus on active methods like testing yourself and spacing out your study when you're alone.
Right. Don't just reread or highlight endlessly.
And when you work with others, make sure it's structured, maybe with roles, aiming for real collaboration.
Definitely. And don't forget the foundation, those study habits, skills, and keeping a positive attitude. They really, really matter.
Cultivate those SHSAs.
Precisely.
So here's something to leave you with, a final thought. Given that so much of the research we looked at focuses on, well, surface learning and quick recall, what could you do differently? What creative or perhaps less study approaches could you experiment with in your own life to aim for that deeper understanding, that truly long-lasting knowledge?
That's a great question. How do you go beyond just passing the test and really internalize and apply what you learned? Something maybe current research hasn't fully captured yet?
Yeah, food for thought. We really hope you'll take these ideas, play around with them, and figure out what truly optimizes your learning journey. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.